Well, today we have a very special guest under the spotlight, and we're excited to have Gareth Icke here. He's an activist, a singer, songwriter, an author, a former international beach soccer player. That's interesting. And he's the host of and creator of the Gareth Icke Tonight Show, an uncensored current affairs show on Iconic Network. He also presents The Walk, which is a YouTube channel where he travels across the UK, walking historical routes and exploring the UK's vast history. And there is a vast history there, as well as a WTAF podcast where Gareth and Richard Willett take a comical look at world events. Gareth, I believe, if we're correct, has just recently started a new show on Iconic titled The Power of People, where we believe he talks with individuals who have gone through great challenges and overcomes them. He's a husband, a father of two children, and lives in Derbyshire, England, and he's obviously a very busy guy. So we're grateful to have you here today, Gareth. Welcome to the spotlight.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so let's start off with, obviously, you cover current affairs in both your show on Iconic as well as your podcast. So if you had to name three of the most critical current affairs that our world is dealing with today, in your opinion, what would they be?
All of them are a complete fabrication, I would say. I think climate change is huge, not because I believe in it, but because it's what is being used to drive changes to society. I think Ukraine is huge, again, not because I believe, you know, Russian man bad, but because, again, I think that's being used along with the conflict in the Middle East to plant the seeds to explode into a world war. So I think those two things are absolutely enormous. And I think the other one, which is huge and ties into all of them, is freedom of speech, which is, you know, something that people talk about all the time, but it's under threat constantly. You know, to put it into context, I think there's around about 400 people in Russian that were convicted of, you know, basically speaking words that people found offensive. I think there's about 400 last year in Russia, and there was 4,000 in the UK. Yet we're told Russia is this, you know, horrendous dictatorship, and the UK is the cradle of the cradle of democracy and all this freedom and all this sort of stuff. So I think that's more and more under threat. And if you get to a point where you can't point the finger at authority and you can't call out authority, then you're in a tyranny, as dramatic as that sounds. And I think we're getting closer to it. So they would be my three, with freedom of speech probably being the biggest, actually, because that takes away the ability to call out the other two.
Well, I don't know what you've experienced, but Bearspoon and I have experienced, I personally have had three social media accounts shut down. One was during 2020 during COVID, and it wasn't that I was out deriding the medical issues, which I could have done, but I was being a little bit more PC. But I was talking more about exercise and take vitamin D3, exercise regularly, eat healthfully, boost your immune system, take vitamin C. Gone. Instagram shut me down against policy, you know, a community standard. So have you experienced any of that yourself?
Well, my dad was kicked off absolutely everything. He lost everything. For me, to be honest, they've gone with me more down the route of 30-day ban and then another 30-day ban, which you're not actually meant to have. That's supposed to be a final strike, I think. And then they go for massive kind of, you know, hiding your content and stuff or putting warnings on your content. For instance, Instagram now, like I can't do an Instagram live. Like if I try and do it, because I tried to do one a little while ago, I was out on a walk and I was in the middle of nowhere. And I'll be honest with you, I was lonely. So I thought it'd be funny just do an Instagram live. At least you got some interaction with people. And it wouldn't let me. And I was like, oh, what's that about? And it said, because of your, was it continued community violations? Well, it sounds dead Orwellian, but whatever that means. So that's the route they've taken with me, is shadow banning and not allowing me to use features like going live and stuff like that. But for now, touch wood, you know, they've not taken my account or anything like that.
Yeah.
Well, give it time.
Yeah. Don't worry.
It takes a lot of courage, doesn't it? I mean, it really takes courage to speak the truth, because people who speak the truth are persecuted at best and even prosecuted. I saw just today, I don't know if you've seen this, but and of course, this is in the U.S., but I'm sure you're familiar with Letitia James, at least to some degree, and what's going on with Trump and her prosecution of him for this absolutely absurd issue of the worth of his property in Florida. And she went to speak to a group of firemen, and they booed her. And now they're being warned, if they don't come out and admit they were booing, that they're going to be hunted down because there's going to be some kind of prosecution for booing.
Wow.
I don't know what law that's breaking. You know, I mean, it goes back to freedom of speech, obviously.
Yeah.
I don't understand what law that's breaking. It's not breaking a law.
No, it's not. But at the end of the day, from what I've seen over the years, with you know, anti-hate speech laws and all these things that are adopted in one country after the other, all at the same time, as if it's kind of, oh, that's a coincidence, isn't it? And not just the fact that it's, you know, someone's pressed the go button on it, is that actually if there's something that you're doing and it's not illegal, then they just change the law to make sure it is going forward. And so, you know, there's certain things that you might be able to say, and you kind of get through a loophole, maybe. Well, they'll go straight back to the drawing board and then write up a new set of rules, basically. And that's the other thing as well that I found very much throughout COVID, that the laws weren't being passed. They were rules. Mm. Very different things.
Executive orders.
Yeah. But people saw them as that. So people would do, I would do things, and people would go, you can't do that. It's against the law. I go, it's not. It's a rule that says I need to do this. There's no law. There's been no debate in Parliament, and no law has passed through Parliament. Like, all that stuff's nonsense anyway. But at least they have to go through the motions of doing that and go through the House of Lords and have it approved. None of that. So I'm like, no, so it doesn't count. And it doesn't. And so in the end here, we were going on all these protests and doing all these things and speeches in places all over the country. And the police were turning up to arrest people, and they were issuing you with these fines. And to be honest, anyone with a brain just refused to pay it. And then they would try and drag it on. And in the end, they went, oh, yeah, that wasn't a law, actually. That was unlawful. But the people, the poor souls that actually did pay the fines, they didn't get the money back. Oh. You've paid it now. It's gone. Too late. And all of those people that went, I'm not paying it, that in the end, it was like, okay, that's written off. Off you go. And, you know, they prey on people not really understanding the rules and not understanding the laws and not understanding how the Constitution, obviously for you, works and how our you know our laws are here and actually what they mean. The people just go, oh, well, I listen to authority. The policeman said it. When actually so many times throughout, I've seen people reciting the law back to police officers, and police officers are just looking at them completely. They haven't got a clue.
Right.
They haven't got a clue, you know, because that's actually not part of it. You know, it's not like you have to study the law to be a police officer. You know, like if you're a barrister, you got passed the bar and all this kind of stuff. You don't have to be that to be a police officer. You just put some fancy dress on and go out and arrest people because you're told to. But actually, if you recite the law back to them half the time, they'll go, okay, you can go, because you're explaining it to them. It's extraordinary.
Well, they're even discussing in some states here allowing the illegal immigrants. Boy, that's a wired term, supposedly, I understand, to become police officers and to maybe join the military, which is incredibly frightening.
It's insane.
And, you know, it's insane because where's their loyalty? I really sincerely doubt that if we get into war, and we can talk about that in a moment and your thoughts on that, because it certainly is being threatened. And it certainly seems that at some level we're on a precipice of that. And it appears to us that there are people in power who want that to happen. Because fear is the greatest control factor. And COVID was brilliant. It was heinous, but it was brilliant because it's an invisible enemy that makes your neighbor a lethal weapon. And so it's so divisive and so frightening. And I might die, but I'm sure you've seen too now, the CDC is coming out and saying, oh, now we can treat COVID like the flu because it's the flu. And it's about 3 years too late. So what's going on? Gareth, in your opinion, why do you, what's the driving force behind what's happening? Oh, and I love your three issues. I think we would have to agree. Climate change is a scam. There's 1,600 brilliant scientists, peer reviewed, that have come out and said, hey, it's not happening. And and yet they still propagate it. Ukraine sure seems to me to be a money laundering operation, and freedom of speech is pretty self-evident that those things are three hot buttons, which you really nailed it. What do you believe is the driving force behind what's happening in the world right now?
I think ultimately control is the biggest factor. I mean, I know a lot of people think it's money, and I'm sure money does play a part in you know, the military industrial complex and in big pharma and all that kind of stuff. But when you actually get to these big players, and I actually don't believe that, you know, your Bill Gates and your Klaus Schwabs, I don't believe they're the head of the snake. I think they're probably round about the belly, if that. I think that there'll be people above that, you know, don't show themselves, because why would you reveal yourselves if you didn't have to? And so money isn't an issue for even your Bill Gates level people. I mean, the guy could, do you know what I mean? He could shower in the stuff, like he didn't need any more money. So I think it's obviously more than that. And I think control is the biggest factor, control of society, control of the population. And nowhere is that more evident than somewhere like China. So for me, I think that's what the plan is. Ultimately, I don't think that it's just a coincidence that you know, the COVID narrative and the protocols and the PCR test protocols came out of China. I mean, I know they went through Germany, but they came out of China, and everything came out of there. All the information that was given to World Health bodies was coming from them. I don't think that's an accident. And I think, to be honest, you know, to go into your 1984 George Orwell kind of narrative, I guess, I think they want a war between East and West. And that is something that I think has been brewing for a long time. And those chess pieces are being moved at the moment. You know, you've got NATO, which is, you know, basically just the West army, you know, war machine. And, you know, Russia is being pushed closer to China. Iran is being pushed closer to them as well. You've got North Korea being pushed into that. So what you're doing is you're kind of trying to exile these people through sanctions. What you're doing is just pushing them all together, which I don't think is an accident. And I don't think that we're meant to win this war. Mm-hmm. I don't think the West is meant to win this one. I think the East is meant to win. And I think that's the new dawn, basically, very much how it is economically. I mean, you look at where I live, I'm on the border of Nottinghamshire, right, which is not a huge county. It's not a small county by English standards, but it's not huge. It used to have 49 collieries, right? That was the staple kind of thing. Now it's got none. It doesn't have one. And it's all climate change nonsense because, you know, where I live now, I'm sat on top of a coal field, and there's an oil field right next to us as well. And it's basically untapped. We've got all this stuff. And I talked to former miners, and they're like, mate, they're like, this, that coal seam goes right out into the North Sea. Like we could, I think they conservatively estimate, I think it's about 186 billion tons of coal we're sat on here, right? Yeah. And yet we've got like the odd wind farm and the odd solar farm, which, if people don't realize, one, it's nighttime at least half the day, so they're not working. and also it's England. It's just drizzly and horrible for most of the time. So the solar panels are doing nothing. And yet you've got China where they're opening the equivalent of two coal-fired coal plants a day. And it's like, you know, a week. 2 a week being opened in China while that's all of them better. are closed here.
A week, that's okay.
Yeah, but yeah. You know what I mean? So it's like, so they can do what they want. They don't have to hit any of these so-called climate goals or any of this nonsense. So they can just make all the money, they have complete food security, complete energy security. And yet we're here, you know, scrapping around on the floor. America's the same. You're sat on huge oil and coal reserves.
Huge.
Yeah. And yet we're buying in coal from Poland, and we're buying in gas from Russia, who we're told we're supposed to be at war with. It's like, they can just switch that off then. You've made yourself completely vulnerable, and I don't think that's by accident. And, you know, I don't think Biden won that election at all. Not that I think you know, I don't think there's much of a choice between most politicians, if I'm honest. I always say they're two cheeks on the same backside. It doesn't really matter which one you vote for, the government's going to get in. But with him, I think, you know, what you had with basically a senile guy was actually someone that would just say yes and write checks and balances and sign in things that he's told to. He's not going to ask any questions because he doesn't even know what day it is half the time. So they've basically just run America into the ground, which I think, again, is intentional.
Well, and I'm sure you've seen what's going on in Congress. He has 20 shell companies. He's taken multiple millions of dollars under the table from foreign countries, including China. You say that Iran is being driven closer to China, and yet here's the enigma, and then again not, is that Biden is helping fuel Iran too. So it's quite a conundrum.
And yeah.
Let me ask you, do you believe that these issues, which we totally agree with you, by the way, and you know a little bit about both of our stories. Beersheba escaped Iran, and
here we go back to it again.
Yeah, and yeah, well, God willing, no.
Yeah.
And I was the target of the government in 2009-10, and they bankrupted me. They literally took me down. So those things shook us and woke us up a lot. Well, she woke up very early age because it was not a stretch for her to realize that the government was not her friend. But for a lot of us, including me, that was a real rattling of the cage. Do you think this is new since 2020, or do you believe it goes further back than that?
I think it goes way back. I'd say it goes decades back. In fact, the more now, Because a lot of, well, to be fair, I didn't ever really accept their version of events because, you know, my name's Ike. Do you know what I mean? It's sort of in the DNA to you know, I was raised to basically question everything. But you know, most people aren't, and I understand that. You know, you get on with your life and you get your paycheck and you pay your mortgage and you go out for a few beers on a Friday and everything's all right. And you don't really want to look underneath the rock, because if there's spiders and creepy crawlies under there, you don't really want to see them. So you just, you know, that's fine. It's fine. I'm all right, Jack. And unfortunately, that's what's made a lot of Western nations, particularly because we've done pretty well, you know, in terms of our economies and our standard of living. Most people are, I'm all right, Jack. I'm all right. Yeah, no, it's horrible there, what's happening in Gaza, but it's somewhere over the rainbow. You know, it's their problems somewhere far away. And then Russia is slightly different because, you know, well, that's a little bit closer. Oh, okay, you know. But I think what unfortunately it takes for most people is for something to affect them. And only then do they start to look around and wake up. So, you know, they're fine with people breaking into the neighbor's house, but it's when they come knocking on their door that they start to wake up and say, you know, what's going on? Mm-hmm. And so while I think, you know, COVID was obviously horrendous in terms of what they forced on people and the tyranny and what they did to world economies and people's mental health, people's livelihoods, people's health with these injectables and everything else. While I think that is obviously beyond abhorrent, I also think that actually that was them coming out of the shadows, because they've been, you know, people say about this, oh, you know, oh, we want to go back to the old days. I'm like, mate, the old days weren't great either. You just thought they were in comparison to this, but actually they weren't all that great either. You know, we had inequality, we had homeless people on the streets, granted not as many as we've got now, but you know, it wasn't a perfect world. But people weren't affected by it so much, so they looked the other way. Whereas over the last 3 to 4 years, they've started to go, oh, hang on a minute. Oh, this can happen to me. In fact, this did happen to me. And they've started to kind of think, hang on, I did cover my face and I walked around a shopping center following arrows on the floor. What was I doing? Yeah. I was, you know, because people are kind of waking up now out of that coma, weren't they? That was just brought upon by just complete, you know, programming through the media and everything else. And so I think we're actually at quite an interesting time now. To answer your question, I think it's gone on for a very long time, but I think it's just become more obvious now. It's one of those, isn't it? If I put prison bars on your windows in your house, but I make sure that they're invisible, you're not going to try and escape. The minute you see that there's actually bars on the window, do you know what I mean? The baseball bat's coming out, or whatever the jack to try and, you know, you're going to try and get out, because you're very conscious of that as soon as you can see them. And I think most people have lived in that invisible prison cell for most of their lives without really realizing it. And now all of a sudden they became visible because they were literally locked in their home. They were literally told that they couldn't go out. And if they did, they had to cover their face. Yeah. I mean, psychologically, that's insane, you know, and you speak to people like Kathy O'Brien, who was a victim of the MK Ultra mind control program and abuse, mass abuse that was part of the CIA were behind. And she said, I spoke to her and she said that was part of the ritual, was covering your face. They made you as a child wear a mask because it took away your identity and it took away the identity of those around you. There is a very psychological, there's a component to it. It's not by accident. Because it certainly wasn't about, you know, even if you believe in, you know, the deadly virus and stuff, it certainly wasn't scientific. The fact that you've got this deadly pathogen, yet some kind of blue bit of paper that was made in an Indonesian sweatshop is suddenly going to keep me safe. I mean, it's just absolutely ludicrous. And I don't think most people believed it. They did it because they were told to.
Yeah.
And that's the scary part, isn't it? I mean, there was no actual government edict. It was apparently so, but there was no law and there was no edict. And yet the degree and the quickness to which people complied is staggering. I never wore a mask. I just didn't. And I took a lot of flack. I mean, I had people screaming at me in grocery stores and, you know, we didn't take the vaccine either. And we decided, you know, God made us with an immune system, and the immune system becomes stronger through fighting off pathogens. That's how it becomes stronger. And so it's difficult to do that. I mean, I didn't like getting called names in the grocery store. And sometimes Bearsabu would even say to me, you know, just, you know, why don't you just wear it? I'm like, no, I'm not going to. You know, I'd put it under my chin. And so anyway, it's really surprising how quickly people comply. And I think, and I'd love to hear your opinion on this. I think the number one fear of the human species is the fear of death. I mean, it's pretty hard to argue. And so the fact is we're all going to die physically. Now, we could talk spiritually, and that's a whole different matter. You know, our energy never dies, and that's even physics. Mm-hmm. But we're all physically going to die at some point. And yet it's the number one fear, and we want to avoid it, and we want to suppress it, and don't want to look at it. And so that's what was put upon us. And consequently, people who are in fear are easy to control.
100%. 100%. But I think, do you know what was funny as well, though, is I don't know if it was the same in the US, but here it became quite apparent quite quickly, with the exception of a few people that were quite hysterical about it, because I think it was their Dunkirk, you know, like it was their blitz, you know, like I lived through COVID. It's like, yeah, so did everyone else, mate. But they kind of had that as that was their thing. It was like going back to the fact that people have had these privileged lives. I think that's why when you look at impoverished countries, you know, countries in Africa where they just got on with it. They weren't bothered and they didn't take these vaccines and they had a hell of a lot lower excess death rate because they're just used to, you know, stuff happens, man. Life is not always nice. Let's just get on with it. Whereas in the West, we were just kind of like, you know, I've had a pretty good life really. And actually now there is some status in being a victim, which I believe, as mad as it sounds, was started by your X factors and things like that. Like when people sing on the X Factor, it's not about the singing. It's about their sob story. It's about that they grew up and they were beaten by their parents or their dad died when they were young or whatever. No one ever stands up and goes, yeah, I had a great upbringing. Both parents really supportive. They're in the crowd now. And this one's by Marvin Gaye. Like that never happened. It's all about the sob story, isn't it? So you create this place where everyone wants to be a victim and then you give them a reason and they go, yeah, I've got long COVID. You haven't, mate. You're just overweight and you're lazy. And it's a really great way to be a victim and have that moral superiority as well, because you took your jabs and you wear a mask and you were saving granny when actually you were doing anything but. But I'm the same as you. I didn't go along with any of it. I didn't comply with it. I'm not doing it, because what I realized very quickly with with it, with was, like I say, with the exception of those that were hysterical, is actually most people very quickly realized that this wasn't anything of any significance. And actually, it was the flu. The fact that you've got one illness with a certain amount, a certain number of symptoms, disappears, and a new illness arrives with the same symptoms and replaces it. I mean, that's a sleight of hand, if ever I've seen one. But what I found was these people weren't worried about getting ill, and they weren't worried about the police either. They weren't worried about the government. They did what they were told because they were worried about what Dave across the road or Joan at work would say about it. And that was the most extraordinary thing. It was like, you've basically just run yourself into the ground, lost everything, essentially locked yourself away, taken away all of your individuality because you're scared about what Dave across the road thinks. I mean, that's embarrassing, you know. And I'd have these conversations with people, like, for crying out loud, mate, it's just what a life.
Yeah,
Dave's an idiot.
Yeah.
Yeah, it you know what comes up for me, and I
that's
can't.
That's fascinating, though.
I can't quote it directly. I'm sure maybe you've heard of it, but there was a study done years ago, I believe at Stanford, where they put a guy in a room, hooked him up to some electrodes, and they put another guy in a different room, and the official person kept telling they were going to ask him questions, and if he got the question wrong or the answer wrong, he got shocked. Have you heard about this research?
Yeah.
I can't quote it directly, but they ended up pressuring these people, and the guy in the other room wasn't really getting shocked, but they didn't know that. And so they dialed it up to kill a person level, and the people would comply because some authority told them this is what you have to do. And so it's really quite staggering, and it's quite frightening. And yet, what do we do about it? You know, Bearspin and I were speaking, and I'd love to hear your opinion on this, with someone the other day who said to us, well, there's nothing you can do about it, you know, what's going on in the world. And he said, there is some truth to ignorance is bliss. What's your take on that?
I think ignorance is bliss for a very short period of time. I was always taught, you know, you can bury your head in the sand, but your backside's exposed, and there's only a certain amount of time until someone's going to take advantage of that. So it's a very short-sighted view for me, is to you know. And also, I'm one of these people, I want to know the truth. Tell me the truth. You know, do I look nice in this outfit? Don't say yes if it's not true. You know, I don't see the point in living a life that's not real, for one. Because I agree with you. I agree, like, energy goes on forever, but I'm only me once. I'm only me here till it's decided I'm not, basically. So I don't see the point in not being true to yourself and not giving everything while you are, you know, in this realm, basically. But I think it's a numbers game, and I've always thought that. I agree with the person in the sense that you can't change everyone's mind, and nor should you, to be fair, because then you just become a tyrant the other way. I don't think you will change everyone's mind, and that's something that's quite a difficult realization, because actually, especially if you love that person, you know, especially if it's a member of your family or your friendship group that you're pleading with them to just open their eyes. I mean, there was a lot of that going on when it came to the vaccine rollout, of course, you know. But in the end, you know, I always say, like, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't stop it shooting itself in the head. If that is what it's decided to do, then that's what it's going to do. And actually, your energy, therefore, is better to just move ever so slightly. And there's someone stood next to them that might be more open to actually looking at the world from a different angle. And I found that massively through COVID. Those people that I'd been aligned with in the anti-war movement, as soon as COVID came along, and I saw through that straight away, because it's the same people telling me that were telling me everything else that they were lying about. So I looked around me and I was like, right, guy, everyone's gone. Like, the anti-war movement just bowed. Like, they bowed. It was extraordinary. And there's people, you know, in this country, like George Galloway has just been elected, who, you know, was a massive part of the Stop the War movement here, the Stop the War Coalition. He was calling for Chinese style lockdowns. And it's like, what, how did that happen? But then I've seen now more and more people kind of wake up, but they weren't in the places I was expecting. Most of the people speaking out here were footballers, they weren't the rock stars that fought back against the establishment. It was rock stars that were bowing down to the establishment and were pushing the vaccine. Whereas footballers, stupid, not very bright footballers, just kick a ball around. They were the ones that were seeing through it and speaking out and saying stuff on live television. And then, like, you know, Sky Sports were desperately trying, like, whoa, back to the studio, you know, and all that sort of desperate stuff they do when someone says something. And so what I saw was actually people wake up that you wouldn't have expected. And so it's like, okay, well, let's stop trying with you guys then. You're not going to wake up, but these people are actually open to stuff. And so more and more people now are questioning the world, questioning what they're told, disbelieving authority, or at least questioning authority in a way they weren't before. So actually, whilst your man is right, you can't change everyone. I think you can change enough. You can wake up enough people. And then for me, it's like a dam bursting. It's only, I don't think you need a majority to change society at all. I mean, they say it's 3%, don't they? I don't know if my light's just gone out on me. I don't know if it is 3%. That's a figure that people say, isn't it? That you need 3% of the population to start a revolution.
Right. Yeah.
I think we're getting really close to that. I honestly do. Maybe I'm just, you know, an eternal optimist, but the way that the establishment is forcing everything through now from every angle, they're hitting us from every angle. I think that's desperation, because I think there's an awakening happening and I think they're terrified of it. Mm-hmm. And so they're trying to get everything they want through the door before, you know, everyone kicks it down, basically. I think that's what I see anyway.
I love hearing your opinion on this. We happen to believe there are some things that we can do, and I'll come back to that in a few moments. But I just have to ask you, because of your comment about every politician is a different cheek of the same backside, or I don't know if that's the exact quote, but it's got the theme. And I listened to you talking about the footballers, and you were a footballer, and you're kind of saying they're not the stop the war people, and I don't know exactly what that means. You know, you kind of mime that they weren't that bright in all cases; they were just footballers. And so that's the
public perception of them more than my right. perception of them. I mean, don't get me wrong, I played with some real idiot footballers, but I played with some very bright ones as well. But the public perception is that, you know, footballers, you know, idiots, whereas your artists are very bright and very intelligent, but actually they were the ones that fell for it, you know.
Well, and so that it brings mm-hmm. up so many things for me, because if you look at Hollywood, Hollywood has bit into the controlling narrative hook, line, and sinker with very, very few exceptions.
Yeah.
And you know, there's a lot of theories that hold some weight that they're encouraged and on the take to do that, and that in many cases their careers are attached to that. But I gotta ask, going back to the two opposite cheeks of the same backside, it looks pretty clear now that it's going to be Trump for sure that's running for president, and who knows? I don't believe the corpse is going to make it. I really don't. And so there's a lot of people that have gravitated towards Trump that would kind of be put in the category of footballers, if you would. You know, they're the truck drivers and the farmers and please, as a viewer, I have the utmost respect for all of those people, because they're fighters, and the artists, if you will, and the actors and the celebrities, they're not fighters. They play like they are in movies. But nonetheless, he's definitely pushing against something, and they're coming at him for some reason. And I know there's some who say, he's just the other cheek of the same backside. I'd love to hear your opinion on that, because he certainly is going through hell for some.
I'm personally not a fan of Trump. I never was, even before Warp Speed, which I kind of which he still claims is a huge success, which I find very strange. Why? But then there's an ego with him, though, isn't there? Which there's an ego with all these people, which I think is maybe why he won't roll back on that, because to admit you're wrong, gives your ego a bit of a boot in the head in people's minds. I actually think it's actually a good thing to be able to change your opinion, when you're met with new evidence or whatever. I also have a problem with him refusing to pardon Julian Assange. I think that was something that he should have done, and would have been a huge statement if you're genuinely fighting the globalists. I kind of feel that with the election in the US, and to be fair, the election here is the same. We're kind of running real parallel at the moment, both of us, as nations, is that actually they win-win with this election, because if Trump wins, if they allow Trump to win, then, the left will lose its mind. It will lose its mind, and those piles of bricks will be left on street corners all over again. And I think you'll have a repeat of the George Floyd riots and everything else that went off. I mean, people forget that they took over large, areas of like Seattle and made them completely lawless and stuff. It was a crazy time. But then on the other hand, if Trump gets arrested or they throw him in jail or they stop him running, then you're going to have all of those people that support him will lose their minds as well. And so, either way, I think there is a real potential for some kind of, civil conflict in America. And I think that's probably the idea, because it's a great way to drag America down even more. I think these people vote for or support Trump because they see him as the lesser of two evils. I think that's probably why most people vote for most politicians, actually. I don't think there's probably a small percentage that think Donald Trump or Rishi Sunak or Tony Blair is their friend. But most people are like, well, who else are you going to vote for? I'm not going to vote for Biden. I'm not going to vote for the Democrats, because they're just basically going to force in all this gender critical race theory nonsense. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be part of that in my life, which I need, I agree. So actually, we're going to go, for the lesser of the two evils. But actually, in the end, on the big things, I feel like you've got a one-party state, and we definitely have a one-party state here, where actually they argue across the table about certain things, but when you come to climate change, aligned, COVID, aligned, war, generally aligned. And so those three huge things, they will be on the same page as everything else they can argue about and make this illusion of democracy. For me, I think, the difference at the top end of the Republicans and the Democrats is the same as the difference between the Conservatives and the Labour Party here, which is the Labour Party are the Conservative Party, but with a pride flag on. That's basically it. They badge themselves as this kind of more moral side, when actually that's complete nonsense. They use minorities to get elected. They don't support them, couldn't care less. I mean, the idea that Biden cares about transgender people, the guy couldn't care. He probably doesn't know what one is, so yeah. He's not bothered. But that they do what they do to get votes. I think the other thing is, I think a lot of people that are this, like you obviously said, like the artist types, your Hollywood types, those kind of, and I spent a lot of time around those people, and you avoided talking politics with them because you'd want to take a revolver to your head after a 10-minute conversation with them about it, because they're so moralistic, or at least they believe they are, that they basically, their heart's on their sleeve but the brain's in the bin. And so you will have a conversation about immigration and they will just go, well, everyone should be allowed in because that's the nice thing to do. And you look at them going, right, okay, two words, public services. Like, where's everyone going to go? Where's everyone going to work? Oh, I don't know. Figure it out. Well, they won't figure it out. That's that's idiocy. Whereas people on the right, I think, engage their brain a little bit more with stuff like that. And they're a little bit more realistic, I think, with certain things. But then there's other things that you wouldn't agree with. I think, if you had a combination of the two, which I think would probably be a good idea, actually, in terms of a political system, to have people, representatives from both sides within a government, so that you can actually have that perspective coming both ways. I mean, I can't see that ever happening, to be honest, but it would be, I think, a decent way of doing it. Because both sides have good ideas and both sides have horrendous ideas. It's just the idea that they push those ideas on people that don't want them, which happens a lot.
Yeah, I think the... Green. the irony, I do agree too. The irony is that the people who are, quote, inclusive are inclusive as long as you agree with me.
Yeah.
You know, which
it's the way it's the way the anti-racists only see race.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. They're obsessed with it. Obsessed with it. You know, we've got theater showings here now in the UK that are black only.
What?
Yeah. And so, you know, it's like, I think that's segregation. That I just want to put it out there. Like, yeah, and it's run by the anti-racist movement. So what you've got is you've got the anti-racist movement doing what the racists did in the United States in the 50s and 60s to combat racism.
Wow.
I mean, you can't make it up. Yet the media thinks it's a great idea. Yeah, it's a great idea. Imagine turning up to watch. But the other thing is that surely I can go anyway because I can just identify as that and no one can say anything.
That's right. True.
So I'm still allowed in. but that's the madness of it. And it's the same. It's the same as the, you know, the anti-sexists. They only see sex. That's literally what they see. They don't think who's the best person for the job. They go, oh, it's another white man. And so, you know, particularly in this country, to be a working class white man is like best of luck, son. They literally are the failing demographic, and that statistically they're the failing. They are the most likely to fall into drug abuse. They're the most likely to be homeless. They're the most likely to be alcoholic. They are the most likely to not go to university. Then they're the most likely to drop out of university if they actually do get there. They're bottom of the league in every single table because they've been completely neglected. And in fact, just last year, or maybe what year are we now? So 2022, a wealthy guy was seeing the fact that there were all these scholarships being started for different communities, but not for white males. And so he put forward a few million pounds, as you do, to do a scholarship for working class white kids. And they were banned. They were banned from doing that, but they had those scholarships for every other demographic. Wow. And then what amuses me now is that's what you've done for a period of years. And then they've come out saying that we're going to have conscription potentially to fight the Russians. And the people they want to fight and die for them are overwhelmingly the white working class males who all went, no chance, mate. Why would I fight for you? I mean, I saw one guy come back to him just going, why would I fight for you? If the Russians invaded, I'd be stood on the beach to welcome them, mate. Because that's basically what you've created in this country. It's mad. It is mad. Everything's inverted. I've realized that. If they tell me X, it's definitely Y.
Wow.
Well, and that's happening here, too. I mean, it's really, I mean, Biden says that the biggest threat we have is white supremacy in our nation is white supremacy. And last time I checked, he's white. So I don't get it. And if you go back, I don't know if you've seen any of the old video footage of him talking about, you know, just incredibly deriding black kids coming into his children's schools and all those kinds of things. So change of heart or change of agenda, you know, you have to decide for yourself. But I happen to go with the latter. I do believe there are some practical things that individuals like you, me, and Bersava can do in these turbulent times. And I'd love to hear what your thoughts are on some really practical things we can do to have a positive impact on these issues.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I think as simple as it sounds, but pointing out the idiocy of things that are happening, I think is vital. And I found that throughout COVID, because my idea wasn't to be an activist. That was never my idea. You know, I'm just like, you know, I'll say what I think because it's how I was raised. But the idea of standing with a bullhorn on the street was never something, I'll be honest, I ever saw myself doing. But then what was happening throughout it is so many people were messaging me, people I used to go to school with, people I play football with, that were like, mate, I agree with what you're saying on your Facebook, but I can't say it because my boss is X, Y, and Z, or because my mother-in-law is X, Y, and Z. So actually it was like, okay, well, I work for myself. So unless I have a moment of madness and sack myself, I've kind of got a bit of a duty to actually then speak out for those people that kind of want to say something, but actually they're going to, you know, they've got more to lose. And so I think that's vital. If you're in a position like we are, fortunately, where we can speak out, then you have to. I feel that. I think that's a duty that if you have to, you know, call a spade a spade, you have to say it as it is. And if people call you names, well, whatever. Do you know what I mean? They'll be calling someone else names tomorrow. And another thing I think, which is really important, which a lot of people don't do, is actually live the life that you're promoting. I see it all the time where people talk about doing this and talk about doing that, and they don't do that themselves. They don't live that way. So they preach it. You see it on a lot of these kind of YouTube, you know, wellness and lifestyle coach types, and they don't damn Burger King an hour later. Like everyone's like projecting this idea of themselves. And it comes from social media for me, where you take a picture on Instagram and wow, don't you look great in that picture? It's like, yeah, it was the 40th attempt. Like no one ever actually wants, you know, with like 100 filters on it or whatever. Everyone's living this fake life. So I think that's vital as well,
then you apply a bunch of filters to it.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. But that's what I think is important, that is to be sincere in what you're saying, in the way that you're living. Be authentic. Mm. And if you can just improve yourself by doing that, then you improve the lives of people around you. They do the same. All of a sudden you've got this effect on society that most people don't think they can have, because it's just little old me. I'm in a house in Derbyshire. What can I do? I can't do anything. I'm not a politician. Well, actually, of course you can, because you do things that affect the neighbors. They do things that affect their neighbors and their friends and their aunties and uncles. And in no time, actually, the world is a better place because of just a few simple changes that you can make to your life.
Yeah.
The most important one for me, which is probably the most difficult, is to not be reliant on anything. Whether it be for your food, for your water, for your electricity, for everything. And that's the real hard one. And that's the real tough one. It's real tough. And you know, people are doing it, but it's people that own land. And most people don't own land, because land costs an awful lot of money. But I think in the end, that's the way we're going to go, is that actually we're going to be more self-sustainable to fight back against the climate change agenda, which is kind of ironic, really. But I think that's, you know, how it's going to be. And so I think that's vital as well, is to learn a trade and not be reliant, you know, learn how to do stuff, you know, even if it is, again, as simple as it sounds, even if it's a YouTube video, learning how to grow food or do something practical so that further down the line, you have something going for you that you can barter with. Because I also think that the financial system is going to collapse. I think it's meant to collapse, and it's totally done on purpose just to lead to chaos. But if you can offer something in a barter system, which is hilarious, because I don't know what these YouTube influencers and Instagram influencers are going to do. I guess come around and sit in the garden and pose for you. I don't know, for favors, but
it's kind of hard to monetize that, though.
It kind of, yeah, exactly. But I think that's what will happen. You know, this guy grows potatoes. You know, this guy's a hairdresser. This guy's a personal trainer. This guy is you know, a doctor. Or at least, you know, holistic practitioner or whatever, you know, okay, well, I'll sort out your, you know, I'm a chiropractor. I'll put your spine back for a bag of potatoes. And actually it might well come to that, where you completely step away from the establishment. So you don't need their permission for anything. I'm sure they'll try and crack down on that, but I think that's something that's important as well, is to actually bring something to the table.
Yeah. That's a tough one.
The become self-reliant is really a difficult one. We've talked about it, and it's challenging, because we don't own a whole lot of land either, and so
we support, you know, our local farmers.
We go to our farmers market.
Yeah,
we get all of our meats, you know, from our local farmer, and it's all grass fed and grass finished, and it's all healthy. And we do all those things. And one other thing that we've done that I think all of us can do, and I'm talking to the viewer as well today, is we decided to stop supporting businesses that we disagree with their ideology.
Yeah.
We got rid of all of our Nike workout gear. You know, we used to have a lot of it, and we just got rid of it. And we stopped with Disney, and we stopped, you know, with a myriad of things that we didn't agree with their ideology. And I think that's one way that I see, and we can see this collectively, it has an impact where it hurts them on their profit and loss statement. And that's where we have a tremendous amount of power. They need us. We don't need them.
Exactly. And just look at Bud Light. nearly got bled like then, but it was a fraudulent slip. But then it's the same here with Costa Coffee. Costa Coffee did it here where they put this ad campaign out and it was like this cartoon, but it was a girl who just had Bermuda shorts on and with mastectomy scars because, you know, they transitioned and it's a kid. And that was an ad campaign. And so, you know, people went, no chance. I mean, you know, it is quite overpriced, but I would occasionally have a Costa. If you go into a service station, they're nearly all Costa or Starbucks, and I'd been boycotting them for the best part of 20 years. So I was like, well, that's fine. I won't have a coffee. I can live without a coffee. That's fine. I'll just make one when I get home. And so you're right, completely. You make those decisions. It affected them massively in the pocket, and they came out and they apologized for it. You know, won't happen again. Sure it will, but it's important. Absolutely, you decide where your pounds and dollars go. Mm-hmm. you know that's it. And the other thing, actually, to be fair, and I should have said this as well as the self-sufficient thing, because I think being self-sufficient, unless you own farmland, is impossible. Probably you can strive to get as close to it as you possibly can, but especially if you have a family, it's probably different if you're just feeding yourself. But if you've got a family, it's hard. But that's where finding your tribe comes in. That happened massively in COVID here. People found their tribe because they were lonely. They might be the only person at work or the only person in a friendship group or the only person even in a family that saw through it. And so they're like, right, this is hella lonely. So they would come to protest, they'd meet people in their local area that were also at the protest. Suddenly they've got a group. They were called Stand in the Park. They had started this group here in the UK, and goodness knows how many lives it saved, countless. Just by giving people some social interaction and getting them out of the house where they were just sat on their own. And so that's where you make friends with the local farmers. That's where you know, and so they can support your group with that. And then you bring something else to the table, like I say, with this bartering thing. So actually, you don't have to be self-sufficient as you know, an individual. It's kind of, well, I'm self-sufficient, but there's 20 of us.
Yeah.
And we're just within this community. That is doable then. I think that would, you know, that changes things. That,
yeah.
And where does that land us who are peddling, for lack of a better word, or propagating information? And you know, you talk about the Instagram models and so on and so on. Where does that put us, much like yourself and Brisbane and I, who are putting out information long term, in your opinion?
Well, I think knowledge is always needed. And things are always evolving. I mean, to be honest, I would love nothing more than to not have to put out information about corrupt governments and anti-human cult-like behavior. I would much rather it all just ended and I could go and live near some old country railway station and watch trains go by. That would do me. But that's not happening for a long period of time. And so I think, you know, no matter what, people within government or people within authority or whatever will always need someone to keep them in check. And I think, and that used to be what journalists did 100,000 years ago, it seems now, but it used to be. That's the job of a journalist, is to get to the bottom of what's happening. And then what happened is journalism became partisan. And so you go, oh, that's a left-wing magazine or that's a right-wing magazine. I don't care what wing it is, just tell me what happened. I don't need your slant on it, you know. So I think that there will always be a place for people that are, you know, spreading information and calling out authority and explaining the way that the world is. I think that's important. And if you have to do that, you know, with having slagged off solar power, with a little solar thing in your garden to you know, power your setup so that you can podcast. And if the internet goes down and all that kind of stuff, like I'm sure it will. Well, the internet's not been around for that long. You know, think how many revolutions happened before the internet. You know, I think pretty much every single one, because I don't believe the color revolutions across the Middle East were anything more than complete scams anyway. So any legitimate revolution was happening. You know, the suffragettes weren't going on podcasts. So I think, you know, we'll just have to go out to village halls and get the bullhorn back out again and you know,
get on the horses and ride and yell.
Exactly. That's what it is. You know, the people always know the truth when they hear it. I think deep down it resonates completely differently. And so I think there's always a place for someone who's willing to say it, no matter how uncomfortable it is, because, you know, they might shout at you and slag you off because you might be telling them things they don't want to hear. But deep down, they know when they hear the truth. And I think that's what is vital for everyone to keep doing. No matter what, they throw at you. Yeah. You know, for me, I always use the analogy of if you found out your friend's wife or friend's husband was having an affair, and you go and tell them, look, I was out last night and I saw, with another woman, blah, blah. They're not going to thank you for that.
No.
They're not going to go, oh, cheers for that. Thanks for that. They're going to have a go at you. They're going to attack you. They're going to say, yeah, you've always been jealous of our relationship. And they will try and turn it on you. And that's what society is doing a bit with people like us, because they don't want to hear it. Mm-hmm. But it's important they hear it. And deep down, they know it's true. And after a while, that friend will come back to you and go, look, I'm sorry. I'm sorry about that. I'm sorry I reacted in that way. You were right. They were having an affair. And you make up and carry on. And I think that's kind of what will happen with society and people like us, is in the end we'll have a handshake and get on.
Yeah,
we'll be part of the same community. I got to ask you this question. I didn't plan on it, but it's coming up for me. We've heard your dad's opinion, and he makes a lot of sense. He always does. And do you believe, you personally? I want to hear your opinion today. Do you believe that you can be part of the billionaire club and be on the side of goodness and God and righteousness in today's world?
Short of making it by being an incredible sports person. And even then, to become a billionaire, you would have to sign endorsements with some horrendous sweatshop running companies, and look the other way in terms of morality on that. So I would probably say no. I don't think so. I'm not one of those people that has a problem with rich people. You'll find a lot of people, mainly socialist types, or at least, self-prescribed socialists, that have a problem with rich people, like, rich people bad. I don't have a problem with rich people at all. I know plenty of rich people. They're nice enough. They're all miserable. I'll say that for them. They're all miserable, every single one of them. But I don't have a problem with rich people. But when you get to the levels of billionaires, I don't see how you can possibly acquire that amount of money without stepping on someone's face. And also, if you've still got that amount of money and there's people around you that are homeless and starving and whatever, then again, that jigsaw doesn't fit for me. So no, I don't think so. I'm happy to be proved wrong, though. I'm happy for a billionaire to come out and save everything, but I'd
be elated to be proved that can happen too. So X seems to be a breath of fresh air. Is it a breath of fresh air? Is it for real or is it a ruse?
I to be honest, I don't believe that it's free speech. I know a lot of people that are still banned on there. People like Max Egan and stuff are still banned from there for things that they said about the Middle East conflicts and things like that. So again, if there's free speech for me and not free speech for thee, it's not free speech. It's for everyone, or it doesn't exist. Otherwise, it's just freedom to conform to whatever parameters are set in front of you. I don't trust Musk, because I look at what people do rather than what they say. And so he is this, now leader of the freedom movement, a freedom movement which is mainly awake to the issues of AI. It's awake to 5G and 6G. And this kind of stuff. And here you've got a guy that's firing tens of thousands of satellites into the sky to beam 5G onto the planet, and, is putting chips in people's brains.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see how those two things marry up. You've also got, the climate change agenda, where they're trying to force everything towards electric cars, which in the end will become driverless cars, which means you can go where the car computer tells you can go and you can't go anywhere else. And he's, the owner, at least in name, of the biggest electric car company on the planet. Again, these things don't marry up. And the other thing is, I don't see how he runs all of those businesses and spends as much time on Twitter as he does.
It's true.
So I'm questioning. And the other thing, which is the biggest red flag for me, was that if you are a freedom of speech advocate and you're genuine and you want to buy the biggest social network on the planet, they will not let you do that. But with Elon Musk, not only did they let him do it through BlackRock and Morgan Stanley, they helped fund it. And then they even tried to sue him when they thought he was backing out. So they literally guaranteed that he took control of it. Now, if me and you and my dad and a few others that are genuinely in this for the for genuine reasons and for the long haul had managed to get some money together to buy Twitter, there's no way they'd be selling it to us. Not a chance.
Yeah.
They threatened to sue him if he didn't buy it.
I knew that he got threatened to be sued. I wasn't aware until this very moment that BlackRock was involved. And that says a lot right there.
There's a lot of investment firms, Morgan Stanley being one of them. I think was it Morgan Stanley? No, JP Morgan, sorry. BlackRock's in there as well. So there's a lot of quite interesting information out there on him, which you know gets deleted from various platforms, as you can imagine, but you can still find it every now and then. But I don't trust him. But again, I'm one of those people, you know, I would love to be proved wrong. In fact, I want to be wrong about all of this. I want to actually be a complete tinfoil hat weirdo and actually the world's great. That's the best, because that means my kids are actually in a decent world and I just got it wrong. That's what I would rather.
Right. Well, I got to tell you, Beersheba did put on a tinfoil hat when she was a little kid. That's a whole nother story.
You know, or maybe it did work.
Yeah. So here she is. Maybe there's something to that. I never did. So how you, this has been brilliant and want to be respectful of your time. Mm-hmm. How do our viewers find your work?
So iconic.com is probably the best place for it in terms of the weekly show, which obviously I was, you know, privileged to have you both on there, and for, you know, some of the comedy stuff, because again, I think that's important. So the WhatsApp podcast, what I found early doors when you're dealing with bullies is there's nothing a bully hates more than being laughed at. Yeah. So laugh at these people, because actually, you know, these all powerful people are actually just a bit of an embarrassment, really. So I think it's funny to point and laugh at them. And then the other stuff is The Walk, which is on YouTube, which just started off basically, it's just at Ike Walks on YouTube. It started off as basically just, I like walking, you know, I've had a hell of a lot of leg injuries over the years. And so I don't, you know, I don't take for granted now my ability to walk 30 miles. I'm literally like, this is a privilege, but I do this now. And then I just started finding that there's so much of our history that's completely erased or very nearly erased. And so you can find some unbelievable things just hiding away in different parts of the UK that I've managed to, you know, stumble upon and find, you know, things from the 16th, 17th century that people didn't even know were there until I, you know, kicked away some mud and uncovered stuff. So it's amazing. And it's kind of not meant to be related to any of this stuff that we're doing. But at the same time, it is, because actually I think our history being eradicated isn't an accident. And so, you know, if I can kick over some turf and uncover stuff, then I'm going to keep doing that. So they're all different things, but that's where people can find me. And I'm also on Twitter for now. I always say for now, you know, because it's only one word wrong in it and I'm out.
Yeah. And this may be the one you just talked about, the owner, the quote owner.
Yeah.
And we're corroborating. So who knows? But
okay. That's it. We'll be in the gulag together, all three of us. Yeah.
And we won't be shocking people just because they tell us to do it. It's the right thing to do. Hey, God bless you, man. And again, thank you so much for your time and your energy and your wisdom. And we'll look forward to staying in touch.
Oh, definitely. Thanks for having me on your show.